So you guys, how many of you guys were the first Samba XP? You remember what year it was? So does anybody remember the first CIFS test event? So I think 1997, right?
I was in 98.
98? Could have been.
97 was the one in Santa Cruz.
Sounds right. In the mental.
Santa Cruz was the second SMB, the second CIFS conference.
And one of these was at a mental hospital that was the Sun headquarters, right?
I wasn't got that one.
So that was Connectathon. It was at the mental hospital. So the NFS people got to go to that one. So former mental hospital turned into a headquarters for a tech company.
You had this problem last time, didn't you?
No, the problem last time was that the cable was loose. It would go on and off. And then you had the same problem with your laptop.
Well, it's crashed. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, sorry. You use that hideous thing about.
I think it's a cabling issue. Okay, so do you guys remember who invented the first Unix extensions for SMB? HP and who else?
And
no, before this. Remember? SCO.
It was Roger Bins.
Yeah, Roger Bins, yeah.
Ah, okay.
He was fun.
Okay, so. Yeah, probably. Who wasn't born with that? I actually remember in the old documentation for SMB1, even before that period, there were Unix extensions or Unix operations. So anybody remember what one of the problems with SMB1 was? Like verbs, lots and lots and lots of verbs. So people would just add commands, and then Chris would document them, right? So one of our goals in this was not to do that, right? So if you look at the server perspective and the client perspective, we violently agree on not adding lots and lots and lots of verbs. So it's nice to not have all these new info levels and new command types. So one of the questions is, how many new commands did we add for the POSIX extensions? Zero. How many info levels? Just a few. So that was one of the things that was very important in our design, because it really does become hard to document, hard to test, hard to really bring this forward. So we added these extensions about a year ago, so we got a chance to demo a little bit last year, but there's been some progress made. And I think it's important to talk about that progress, and it's also important to talk about where we need help and also where we are in the process. So as you probably know, we've merged into mainline kernel support for the POSIX extensions, but it's minimal. And the support was merged only for testing, and it's enough to allow a server vendor, and we saw this at the last two test events, other server vendors got a chance to experiment with POSIX extensions. And then having the support in SMB client gives you a second client to try the same kinds of things with.
So the progress on the server side since last year, I've been working on an external tree, which we have a URL for, but we can't show you right now. Still working on that. And the server pieces are functionally complete, in that everything we wanted to do with the POSIX extensions for SMB2 is actually in the server side. That includes things like setting and getting symlinks, as reparse points, returning correct reparse point errors. The bottleneck right now is essentially that the patch set is kind of a mess. It's a random walk as my brain was creating all the code, moving some pieces around. So what it actually needs is some of the team members, and I have some offers of help from some of the CERNET people here, thank you, to actually refactor this patch set into something that's essentially comprehensible as a continuing story of changes, which is how we like to do things in Samba. Micro commits, essentially moving towards a goal. Each one is individually reviewable. And so what needs doing is that work needs to be, that pack set that exists right now, I'm keeping it up to date. Every month or so, I go back and rebase on current master so that all the patch set is kept up to date. And so once this refactoring is done, we can start to bleed this stuff upstream into master, turned off by default. There's one missing feature before we can turn this on, and that is we need a lot more tests to actually make sure that when you're working with POSIX extensions and UNIX extensions against the same file server, that things are working correctly. One of the missing pieces, Volker offered to write this, to finish writing this up, it's one of the client pieces, is our SMB client library right now, when you give it a path name to open, sends that path name to the server, and right now does not cope with a symlink redirect. So, you know, if you give it a path, you know, foobar baz, whatever, and foobar baz exists on the server, it will open it as a POSIX handle, everything will work correctly. If any of the intermediate components or the last component are a symlink, a reparse point as stored in Microsoft reparse point format on the server, then the server will return a reparse point error, meaning, hey, client, please go follow this symlink. And our client code doesn't currently understand that. So what we need to do is, when we're in POSIX mode, we need to understand these symlink redirects coming back, reparse the path, restitch the path together to somewhere we expect it to be, and follow that link. So that's really the only missing piece in our client tools and our client libraries. Once we have that, and the server code has been rebased to be comprehensible, we can start adding all the tests that we will need and start putting this upstream. So this is a prerequisite, really. We're planning to ditch SMB1, as everyone knows, as soon as we possibly can. It's becoming an incredible liability and a maintenance burden on the team, just coping with security issues that are exposed via SMB1, many other things. So what we'd like to do, the problem is right now we can't just turn SMB1 off and remove the code, which is what I really would like to do, because there are still Linux clients, Steve Linux clients out there that are depending on the POSIX extensions to actually function, the old SMB1 POSIX extensions. So once we've got the SMB2 POSIX extensions in, we can start telling people, look, the SMB1 server is going away. And, you know, this is essentially, it's probably going to take several years to get us to the stage where we literally don't ship SMB1 server code. We will probably always have to ship SMB1 client code to connect to old servers. But the good news is, in consultation with Metz, is for the next release, we're really hoping to just flip the minimum server and minimum client configurations to be SMB2 by default. So if anyone still wants to use SMB1 with the latest releases of Samba, they have to explicitly go back and drop down those protocol revision levels and essentially say, yes, I want this insecure old protocol, please. Which is, it's somewhat similar to the way Microsoft did things. They were a little more aggressive in that when they noticed you weren't using the code, they actually went and removed it from the system. we don't have the capability to do that yet. Maybe I could use one of the SMB1 security holes to go in there and just remove that code. So we're trying memory stick for another. I'm keeping going, Steve, while you're working on the presentation piece. You've seen many of Steve's slides before, plus he has like 300 of them in a presentation, so it's...
But they'll be reference material.
They are reference material, where is that? So, yeah, that's our current plans. Metz also has a plan, and Andrew, Metz and Andrew are thinking about a plan for people who simply cannot move off SMB1 for one reason or another, to actually resurrect some old code that we had in the prototype file server in Source 4, and essentially provide SMB1 as a gateway. So what we will have is a clean, beautiful SMB2 server with all the SMB1 code ripped out, and essentially ship a small protocol translator that will accept SMB1 requests and turn them into SMB2 requests and then forward them to the real server. How successful we can make that, I'm not sure. That wasn't my plan. My plan was to just drop the whole thing. But so, yes, and dance on its grave. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Kai. So the next release of Samba will, like I say, not talk SMB1 client or server by default, and we will see where we go from there. How are we doing? Badly. Okay. Okay, well, we're getting there. Is there anything else you want me to say about that? So the design of the POSIX extensions, this has not really changed from the last time we talked about this. What's mostly changed is the implementation I think Steve was hoping to show you. Essentially, it's a minimal change set. We've reused SMB2, or rather SMB3 features. It's one new negotiate context, one new create context, a couple of new info levels, one for getting information from the server and one for getting information, file system information from the server. And the create context essentially means that the Unix extensions are negotiated on a per handle basis. So unlike the old SMB1 POSIX extensions, you can have a Windows handle and a Unix handle concurrently going to the same server, which actually makes it much easier to test, because previously we would have to have two separate connections, one Windows connection, one SMB1 connection, in order to test interactions. Now we can actually test interactions going to the same code base to make sure that we get the interactions correctly. Other things that we've lost are the ability to set POSIX ACLs. Nobody uses POSIX ACLs, really. They're not. They're in the Linux kernel. They're in the FreeBSD kernel. Practically, they are unused. Just look at the number of people still running NFS v3. Nobody uses POSIX ACLs for anything. So the ability to set those will have disappeared. And we're going fully to Windows security descriptors with SIDs embedded in them for UID and GID. Essentially, the protocol will look a lot more like Windows. And this does somewhat put the burden back on the clients to do the, to do the translation from the POSIX semantics that clients expect to the semantics that the server provides. But it should mean a much cleaner integration with Active Directory and a Windows system. So the SMB1 POSIX extensions would expose the UIDs and GIDs being used on the server to the clients. So if you had a mismatch in, you know, who UID 100 was between server and client, essentially you would mess up. With the SMB2 POSIX extensions, the server can use whatever UIDs it wishes. They can be transient, they can be on the fly, because all you will see coming back is SIDs. For a standalone server where you have no unified UID or GID space, we send back the Windows-defined POSIX SIDs of S-1-5-88, I think it is. So we've essentially reused all of the Microsoft infrastructure that was put in place to provide NFS services on Windows. So we've tried to invent as little as possible. We're still failing. All right, over to you, Steve.
So one of the things So here's the thing that's important to think about. We basically, at some level, have two security models that are going to be common. This isn't directly related, but it's indirectly related. So is this working better? Okay. So one of the models we have is like NFS. In the NFS world, you trust the endpoints. You may have a secure VPN between them, but you trust the endpoints. And you're evaluating the mode bits on the client. And, you know, it's also getting evaluated in the server. It may or may not be important. So having these mode bits stored the way the Windows NFS server is actually quite useful. So, but it's a little bit less useful on the server side. So that's kind of the NFS way of thinking. Now, we can also disable permission checking on the client and just do it on the server. In that mode, we're running multi-user Kerberos-like kind of environment. But in that case, it's still useful for the server to know the mode bits and the server to have this passed correctly. Now, how do we do that with the minimal changes? We've done two things. Negotiate protocol. In negotiate protocol, we had a context. One of the things that was critical was versioning. Well, how are we doing versioning? We've decided to do versioning a different way, so in the 5.1 kernel and later, you'll need that if you're going to experiment with this to Samba now, because this changed. The thought was the version is actually what open context you support. So if we decide there's a new version of, if we decide there's some problem with this and we need a new version of the Unix extensions for, you know, Linux 6.0, you know, Linux 5.0 came out a few months ago, now maybe Linux 6.0 will need a new version of this. If we do that, what we're going to send to the negotiate is a new, the data in the negotiate context will be the create context that we support. So that makes it relatively easy to figure out what the server supports. Okay, good.
Hurrah, we have slides. Soon.
Soon, yeah. Funny. So let's see. Okay. Now we just have to get the right.
Now we just need to make it display.
Need to read German, is unfortunate. Let's see, where is, you read German to figure out which one's settings?
They should display settings.
Oh, there we go. So we want to mirror, and then, where is mirror them?
This is mirroring.
That guy?
Yes. And then here is apply.
Yeah, I should know this. It's actually.
Keep it.
Oh, yeah.
It'll go away.
Yes, keep it.
Yeah.
Now I
think. Okay.
Yay.
So there's a picture of Linux, there's a picture of Samba. And one of the wonderful things about it's so nice to see when somebody else's software or hardware problem is at fault. Because we've had one or two bugs in our history. So, there's a point that we make every year, and I really want to beat this dead horse really, really hard. We are not doing POSIX extensions despite what we're saying. POSIX is this little thing that's from the dark ages nobody cares about. Linux has nothing to do with POSIX. Like, if you look at this, like, this isn't POSIX, right? We're running Macs, we're running Linux, we may be running other operating systems, we're not running POSIX. Now, if you want to beat the horse harder, like, how many syscalls do we have? It's more than that. How many are POSIX? Guys, this isn't POSIX. We said it. Now, I'll give you just to beat the horse harder and harder and harder. Ronnie has been doing amazing work, like trying to figure out all the f-allocate flags and make sure that we all can do these over SMB, right? It's really important stuff, actually, because some of the commands like CP actually use these. Look at f-allocate. It's got 7 flags. Okay, that ain't in POSIX, guys, and some of these are newer. Rename has 3 flags. And that's just 2 syscalls we're looking at. And these are beyond, so these aren't in POSIX, well, one of them is, but the flags are not POSIX stuff. So this is, Linux is changing. So I don't know if you guys ever, like, talk to Red Hat people, but, you know, we had Dave Howells did the Mount API. The Mount API just changed. Linux is evolving. Our job to be relevant 10 years from now or 20 years from now is to make sure that as Linux evolves, we get these POSIX extensions in fast and not wait, what, 8 years between NFS RFCs? You know, you think about NFS 4.2. What was in NFS 4.2? SE Linux support, copy file range. They got 2 things in like 7 years out of all these changes, right? We got to evolve faster. We got to make apps work, the common situations, and deal with the deprecation of that 4-letter word, SIFS. Now, some of you guys are at Samba XP, but we do want to think about why are we doing this? Jeremy is not allowed to say this because he's biased, right? But non-Samba people can look at this and say, why are we doing this in Samba? Because it has 200,000 lines of test code. 200,000 lines of test code. This is a good server to do it in. It has the richest file protocol. Every single client type in the world is going through Samba at some point. It's extensible, it's got the VFS layer, it's secure, it's well-tested, Coverity runs every day on it, against it. It's broadly implemented on lots of operating systems, it's well-proven. So there's lots of reasons why we do it here rather than fork some new project to do. The best general purpose way to access Linux, to support Linux, is this. My argument is that Samba, whether or not we wanted to invent a new protocol, would be the best place to put it for all these wonderful reasons.
I notice you keep looking
at me as you say. Well, I'm actually looking at the Samba guys right behind you, right? But like, if you think about this, people wonder, why the hell is this Samba? Samba's Windows, right? We don't care about Linux, right? But all the Samba people here actually have value. Like, some of them are smart. Like, look at this. Remember this? No, actually, it's a very good team. So remember the IO Lab. Okay, but remember, between here and here, there were about 10 global changes that hit the VFS that changed file systems, about 10. Maybe 2 to 3 affected things we could talk about in the Unix extensions, but that's in a year. So every year, we're going to have to come back 2 or 3 things to think about. Now, I talked about this. We must have this patch. So if you're going to experiment with this, you either backport this one patch, you use SMB client from Jeremy's tree, or you backport this one patch to your distro, or you run, it's easy in Ubuntu and Fedora and all that, run, make sure you're running at least 5.1. And you can experiment with this today to Jeremy's tree. Now, one of the things that we've tried to do is get automated regression going. So some of the things like the SMB torture test, we need to talk about where we are with the SMB torture test for this. In the build bot, this automated testing we do, we have one target now called JRA POSIX that maps to his tree, his current branch in his tree, and it has a very small set of tests right now. We have about 130. This is about twice as many as NFS that we run without the POSIX extensions. Guys, we're running more tests than NFS is without POSIX. Okay, guys, we can do POSIX. With Jeremy's tree, we should be able to get to about 190 tests running from XFS tests. A lot of them are only for local file systems and things are very narrow that we don't run. But I want you to think about this, that every check-in, every time we send changes to Linus, we want to be running against Samba, POSIX and non-POSIX. Today, this group is small. This will be expanding heavily, but it's critical that every time he resyncs with Samba Master, we don't regress something and vice versa. So I don't want to forget that, but I want now to turn it over to you to talk about SMB torture and where we are with that for automated testing.
SMB torture, running against the tree, I don't think I've broken anything. The problem is I need a lot more tests. So what I need to find out is we have essentially defined the interactions between things like Unix, Linux, and Windows opens, how they conflict. The path name stuff is fairly easy to do. It's the more subtle semantics that we expose. Okay, what happens if you have a POSIX lock in an area and you do a read or a write from Windows? Should that conflict? How does it conflict? What happens if you take a POSIX lock and a POSIX handle and then try and put a Windows lock and or vice versa? How do they conflict? How do they interact? What happens, you know, when you have a Windows handle open on a file and then you open a POSIX handle and try and do an immediate unlink to make it disappear from the namespace? All of these things we need tests for. So getting the code in an upstreamable state and the client libraries working is essentially the first step on the road to getting this out there and stable. But the next step is to think of all the squirrely little tests that we can possibly imagine and put them into a POSIX SMB torture suite. The current SMB torture code does test POSIX over SMB1. It doesn't test much. It doesn't test a lot of these interactions. So it would be, yes, Tom. So Tom's comment was, why are you doing your own test suites, you idiots? There's already
one you can,
yeah.
But, you know, for testing the POSIX scenario,
Oh, sorry. So the comment is, you know, for testing POSIX semantics, you should be running a standard suite. Well, that's true, and we can run those standard suites on top of Steve's kernel client. But what I'm talking about is tests to make sure that our implementation is doing what we expect it to do. And that's what we really need to qualify. So Steve and the kernel redirector, it's the same reason that testing Windows by running the Windows redirector and a bunch of tests on top of that is great in that it tells you how Windows apps will behave, but it doesn't necessarily tell you how the protocol should behave.
Right. This is the same as in Windows, right, where you have the group in China that's doing the automated Windows tests, and then you have a separate with simulated client, and then you have the real client test. So XFS test is the real POSIX. XFS test is the gold standard. If you find a bug in EXT4, if you find a bug in the VFS, if you find a bug in the memory manager, the test is going in XFS test. So this is the POSIX suite XFS test. It includes many of the things that Connectathon and some of these small suites used to include. It's enormous. It's got 700 tests for various things.
I would disagree that the XFS tests are a POSIX suite, but I do agree with you that they're the benchmark inclusion.
They have nothing to do with POSIX, right? Because POSIX, nobody in the Linux community, they...
Maybe I misheard what you said, but...
Yeah, I mean, okay. POSIX is not Linux, right? So if you add a Linux feature, so let's use a...
I mean, in practice, there are very few systems that pass the POSIX conformance tests, right? They always require waivers. They always fail huge swaths of the test. They can be brought into compliance, but it's a real challenge to run. But still, there's this defined standard, and it's quite surprising, the semantics sometimes.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and remember that there's something called the LTP, the Linux Test Project, and it attempted to subsume all of these. And so we'll see things from Red Hat testers and others where they've cherry-picked from older POSIX test cases into the Linux Test Project, into XFS test. But I think what you're going to find is that whenever anything was found useful in a POSIX suite, XFS test has nothing to do with XFS. It was just a collection of subtests from everybody. And most of these subtests you'd recognize from previous years on other Unixes. So they cherry-picked and borrowed every possible thing imaginable into this. So to pick on a person specifically, Amir's here somewhere, right? He was doing this... extensions for copy file range, okay? API call in the kernel. Before his patch gets merged, it's required that there are XFS tests that are added for that. So
that's basic hygiene. Yeah. Let me make a more practical, maybe constructive suggestion. I think I've made it before, but I think the goal of the POSIX extension testing should be that you get a similar result to NFS, right?
But no,
you can do better than NFS.
Absolutely not.
You can do better.
No, not can. We already do better. Like at the File System Summit, they were exposing how many test cases they passed. They passed about 60-ish test cases. That's what they claim. The NFS developers claim they passed 60-some XFS tests.
Now you're talking about XFS. Okay, not POSIX, but okay.
So of the 600, you know, many of them are very narrow and they don't matter. But they pass about half as many of the Linux tests as SMB. Now, to be fair, we could add 20 or 30 more, you know, in a week with adding swap file support and various other minor features.
None of those have anything to do with POSIX.
Yeah, but nobody cares about POSIX and Linux.
I'm trying to get at how are you going to test your POSIX semantics work?
So Tom, really, POSIX really doesn't matter.
It literally, people don't care. At the File System Summit, they don't talk about this. What they talk about is making sure Linux
applications work, or do FreeBSD or do macOS applications work when running against an SMB server. So, you know, as you know, that's what people really care about.
Absolutely.
POSIX unfortunately, you know, both Steve and I and you have been in this industry so long that we tend to use POSIX and Unix interchangeably. We'll drift from one to the other in between in the same sentence. But what we really mean is this nebulous thing called Unix compatibility. Right now, the only Unix that matters is Linux. It's the one that Google runs in their cloud. It's the one that Amazon runs in their cloud. It's the one that you guys run in your cloud. It's the only one that matters. We maintain FreeBSD out of kindness, basically. Not that, you know, we have a bunch of OEMs who want to do proprietary work, they choose FreeBSD.
That old dog that you still feed is over there in the corner.
Old Yella. Yes. So we maintain FreeBSD support out of kindness. I'm still trying to get rid of Solaris. There are some.
Oh, that's easy.
Fanatic.
Just ignore it; it'll go away.
Well, they never do. That's the problem. They never do. So essentially, what we're trying to do is to get to the point where people feel safe running. Right now, if you wanted to run a file server and you expected to be able to run Linux applications on it, people would probably say, oh, just set up an NFS server and it'll work. What we want to get to the point is where people say, oh, just run it against SMB3 POSIX.
Right, absolutely.
That's where we want to be. That's what we're trying to do.
Full peers. Yeah, maybe better.
So I think it's important to talk briefly about what you could do literally today. You could walk out of the room, you could clone Jeremy's tree, see the right, get to the master SMB2 branch. You could run with, not 4.18, but with 5.0, 5.1, whatever kernel, or download it from Ubuntu or Fedora. And you could do a certain limited set of features. What would work today, right? The mode bits on create, mode bits on making directory would be correct. The rename semantics would work. Deleting open files would work. The case sensitivity stuff would work. All that stuff would be fine. What wouldn't work? Well, stat wouldn't return the mode bits that you just set. You'd go to the server and you could see it, but, stat wouldn't report that, reader wouldn't report this. These are relatively easy to change, but these are the very low-risk things that emerge today. Now that we have agreement on the info levels, for example, the rest of the pieces are just pending review from Aureliano, Paolo, Ronnie, others. But you have the advantage now of being able to play with SMB client. But before we get to SMB client, I just want to mention, what do you have to do on mount? So you need to mount with 3.1.1. Well, now 3.1.1 is in the default dialect list, so you don't have to specify it explicitly. You specify POSIX on the mount, and no map POSIX, because we're not going to rename POSIX characters to other Unicode, the reserve range. And you probably want to turn off permission checking, but may or may not be useful. On the server, you may want to turn mangled names no. You may want to set your directory and file mask. And you can consider removing, remember that obey PAM restrictions?
That's a Samba bug. We have a Samba bug.
Obey PAM restrictions. It's a little bit obscure, but the mode bits will look strange if you don't remove obey PAM restrictions. Anyway, so these are the SMB comp things on the bottom, and the others were the things on mount. And, you know, if you're curious, here's POSIX path names work. Hey, look, this is with just to Jeremy's tree, right? You know, all these weird POSIX path names at work. You know, here's what it looks like. You know, notice the POSIX in the, you can see in the mount option, you see that we negotiate POSIX, but you can see POSIX up there. The mode bits were saved. Hey, look at the mode bits. We're looking at it locally. You see they're saved. But we're not over the network. We're not returning. They're being returned, but we're not parsing them on the return. But locally, you can see all the mode bits were created correctly. We passed them properly. Make dir. Rename with conflicting, you know, when you have a file open, you're renaming it an open file. It works. You know, statfs returns all the POSIX stuff. That all works. Stat returns all the, you know, whatever. Okay, so remember we talked about negotiate protocol change. Here's what it looks like in the Wireshark. What I want to also emphasize is Aureliano, remember? You did this Wireshark dissector, right? So we have a Wireshark dissector. I have a link at the end of the presentation to his dissector, so you can see what this stuff looks like on the wire. It's very simple, though. The create context, look at the number of bytes involved. It's very small. So this is not complicated on the wire at all. There's what the response looks like. You can see there really isn't much you have to deal with at all. And the dissector. So one of the things I want to talk about is those mode bits, remember, the special ace, and, you know, storing special file types. We talked about what was wrong with what we had.
It's terrible.
I want to emphasize, new API changes are added about once a year. We are going to have to be prepared for what does this look like on the wire? Do we want to ignore it or not? NFS has done a very bad job of this. We need to do a better job. We have various challenges. Most of these are solved. We talked about the rename. The renames solved. The inode metadata solved. POSIX locking. We assume OFD, not POSIX locking actually, because OFD is a more useful thing than POSIX locking. It's POSIX-like, but they're stacked. We have the FS info solved. We talked about the server perspective. We have very little added detail, negotiate protocol, basically, and open. We talked about the what is required by a server to do this. Hard links use the normal set info call. Sim links use the NFS reparse point. Yeah. You have the special SID and F allocator mapped to existing FSCTLs.
So the only really visible change in behavior for a client, and this is fairly obscure, which is why we haven't done anything about it, is if somebody sets Linux extended attributes over the POSIX version of SMB, they get case insensitive extended attributes. So on Linux, you could have a make and a capital M make extended attributes. That would fail against the current yes. POSIX extensions. I'm not even sure whether this is a problem. I know of no applications that insist on multi-case. Well,
the only one I'm aware of is an XFS test, really.
Oh,
there's one XFS test failed because of case sensitive.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just mark that as known fail. Because it would mean we could specify that it's a server design decision as to whether they support case on extended attributes or not. But right now we don't.
We talked briefly about the sending the mode and the owner information in the ACL, right?
Yeah.
Aurelian has done some more additional research on this if you're curious. You can talk to us afterwards. But as you can see, it's fairly simple. The SID is encoded in the -3, and then the best effort mapping is made for the other three ACEs. The info levels, level 100, I think is, 64 fine POSIX information. Server implements that. You can, if you want to experiment, SMB client does that, and you can take a look at SMB client mounted to Jeremy's tree.
Yeah, Volker did a lot of work putting the SMB client pieces in my tree. So.
And I want to emphasize that looking at Aurelian's Wireshark tree and also his Pike sample code may be useful to make it easier to experiment with this stuff. And like I said, at the last two test events, we saw other vendors experimenting with implementations of this. What I expect you'll see over the next, not in 5.2, but in 5.3, what I think you expect to see is the read-dir parsing of the response using that info level we just showed you, the level 100, and also the stat parsing of that response. So what that will mean is that after you've create the file or directory with those mode bits, you'll see that not just locally, but you also see it over the wire. So we're now confident enough in the format of this that we can check into mainline the what was riskier, which is the parsing of that level 100 and the returning of the mode bits and the POSIX information back to the stat call, for example, and redir. We're not seeing any major obstacles with this. On the other hand, the SNIA event isn't until September. Between then, we have an exercise going on in a week or two where we'll do additional testing of this. And we really want people to be reviewing Jeremy's code, trying his code with SMB client. And of course, now that you can try it with a mainline kernel, it's fairly easy to experiment. And I want to emphasize, let's continue debugging with his branch. The XFS test, we have the JRA POSIX test group. The goal of that is to, on every thing we send to Linus, we verify that we don't break POSIX mounts. We test to Azure, we test to Windows, we test to Samba without POSIX. Lots of different combinations of Samba mounts, now POSIX as well. And that branch is set up, and we need to continue to extend the dissectors, send patches, and we also need to be in Redmond in 2 weeks, in September at SNIA, and then probably in Tel Aviv or wherever the January test event is in EMEA. And also, the wiki needs a little bit of love, updating the things that have changed.
Any questions? All right. Aurelian? Sorry,
So we're not going to store the symlinks as symlinks on the server, right? What about the other character devices, block devices, bytes?
The comment is we're not storing symlinks as symlinks on the server. No, storing symlinks as stored as symlinks on the server are a security disaster. And if I had a time machine, my hot tub time machine, I would go back in time and I would do something unspeakable to the inventor of symlinks. So we will be storing symlinks as extended attributes, Samba-specific extended attributes on the server. What this means is that Ganesha and the kernel server will have to be taught what Samba symlinks look like. So the Ganesha guys are actually open to adding that code to say, oh, I ran into... What they will look like on the server is a zero-length file with an extended attribute. Windows actually allows directories with extended attributes to be repost points. I don't think that's a good idea for us, so I'm going to disallow that. The other things like FIFOs, device and character, they're essentially stored the same, a zero-length file with an extended attribute. Inside the extended attribute is the Microsoft-defined format for the NFS representation of it. They're returned as repost points, and then the client gets the information that tells the client what it actually is. Yes, Andrew, comment.
Doesn't that mean won't local Linux applications be confused by these zero-length files?
Local Linux applications will not see them as symlinks. They will only be symlinks for the purposes of SMB incoming clients. This is the only way to be safe.
But how do you stop them accessing them empty files and putting stuff in them?
Then they will no longer be seen as symlinks, because I check that they are a zero-length file before I even read the EA. Yeah. I open it, check it's zero length. If it's not zero length, then it's not a symlink, and I'm not sending anything back. Yeah. What I'm planning to do, another piece I hadn't done yet, is adding something, and we can add this in Python if you like. I was going to add it to the net command, adding another layer of glop into was basically a net symlink, which would create or modify one of these symlinks so that local Linux command lines can actually create them. Yeah. But the server is never going to follow them, and Linux applications are never going to follow them.
There's a related behavior, though, related to your question, and that is when you, let's say you exported a directory that was local, apps ran on locally, that created a symlink, a FIFO, and a character device locally or through Ganesha, what would it look like to you? What would happen when you did a directory search?
So
a Samba share, yeah, where you had a locally created
FIFO. So on the SMB2 Unix, what happens is if I run into a real server-side symlink that I can detect because I've not traversed it, I return it as a repass point to the client and expect it. And I basically fake up the repass point data. So if you create symlinks in the exported area of the file system, so long as they point within the share, then Samba will return them as the new repass points to Steve's client code. And they'll be treated as repass points. Symlinks won't be a thing anymore. Oh, and we're out of time. So thank you very much. So.